Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. It took a lot to get this thing together today because thunderstorms hit Houston last night. Jackie McMullen is safe in Boston where it snowed.
No. Denver. I'm in Denver.
Oh, you're in Denver.
Yes.
Dodo bird.
It snowed in Denver. Oh, my God, Jackie. I didn't know you were in Denver.
I'm in Boulder. Yeah, my nephew graduated yesterday, so I was here.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, I got stranded last night in Austin. McMahon got stranded last night in Dallas, which is good because that's where he lives. And I drove in. I drove in late at night. I will say this, just as a little travel tip 101. Whenever there's a travel disruption, speaking of somebody who's traveled over 100 nights a year for over 15 years, you must pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. You must not rely on the airline. You must not rely on some travel agent. You must actively participate in your own rescue. That's something that Pat Riley likes to say. He got it from a he went on a whitewater rafting trip once, and that's what they told him. You have to be an active participant in your own rescue, and that's one of his things. So you got to take the reins. Call the airline. Yes, Jackie.
So if you're whitewater rafting, what that means is if you're out of the boat, lie flat, feet up, head back. I'm telling you this from experience, having been thrown from a whitewater rafting.
This was going to be a travel tutorial, and it's now a whitewater rafting tutorial. But first thing I did when we landed in Austin, Jackie, was I booked a rental car because I knew we weren't getting in. No matter what they were saying, we weren't getting in. And the first thing that I did when they dumped 500 people from all these planes that had been diverted into the terminal was I went to the rental car counter. Because I wanted to procure the car, because as anybody who watches Seinfeld knows, taking the rental car reservations is one thing, actually having a car is the other. So you secure the car first, then you go back and get your bags. If they bring your bags, they're going to still be there. If your bag is lost, it's lost. If they bring it to the thing, so that's my little
veteran
travel
move.
Tip.
Veteran move.
Yeah.
No trains this time for you, right? I remember you were stranded
trains.
In Boston, but I told you, take the train.
Yeah, and I did take the train, and then I got off the train and got on another train, and you talked about train in hand, one of your all-time great lines. Always keep the train in hand. So we'll get going here because McMahon's got to drive down from Dallas today. Jackie, well, first off, I did introduce Ben McMahon in Dallas. McMahon.
Not
you,
very well.
I'm sorry. You know, I heard last night that Seth Curry called members of the Nuggets sassy.
I think
that's a good name for you. You're sassy.
Who, McMahon?
I don't think he meant it as a compliment, and I'm not taking that as a compliment.
I would love to be called sassy. I think being called sassy is quite excellent myself.
I think there was a little intention to vaguely question or indirectly question their manhood with that.
Oh.
Are you questioning my manhood?
Wow. He called Will Barton. They got involved in a little kerfluffle. They called Seth Curry called him sassy. Yeah. No, it didn't rise to that level, I don't think.
If you push your finger in my face, it's close to brouhaha level. There's at least brouhaha potential when that happens.
I think sassy just means you got an edge and you're...
No. The context is... Seth was pointing out that Will Barton waited until there were several people between them before he put the finger in his face. And he's sassy like that. In other words, he's not manly enough to put the finger in his face when there's nobody between them.
Thank God we have Tim here. Thank God we have you here.
I need to look up a definition of the word sassy because I thought sassy meant that you backtalked or you had a sassy mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is that. I'm trying to make sure I don't say anything that's not politically correct here. It was just the way it was used after pointing out that he waited until people got between him before he tried to escalate the thing. It's basically meant to say, I gotta bite my tongue because I don't know how to describe
Let's do that right now. Let me just say that if that's how you see it. If that's how you see it, I would not call you sassy. I'd call you some other stuff, but you, if that is the definition, then that is not you. Because you don't wait for people to get in front of you.
Here's a definition for sassy. Lively, bold, and full of spirit. One of my favorite words, cheeky. Love the word cheeky.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome if...
Don't be so cheeky.
That would be awesome.
I love saying that.
If during a fight somebody else called another guy cheeky, that would be very
cheeky.
British.
Yeah, love that
Jackie,
word.
We have an interesting times in Boston. All these really good series, two series extended to seven last night, which we'll talk about in a minute. McMahon and I are here in – well, we're not. McMahon's not here yet, but we will be here in Houston tonight for a big game six. Right. And then there's the other series, which is over 4-1. Where the Bucks played fantastic the last few games of the series, but just embarrassed the Celtics. And it is now the Celtics who face an offseason of questions, Jackie.
Yes, I'll say. And, you know, it's – I don't even know where to begin. I covered these guys all year, and I understood the fascination nationally with them and the idea that everything could be right once the postseason started, but it never resonated with me. And it's because, and Jalen Rose, our colleague, made a wonderful point that the Celtics were a space team, right? Space and pace team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what Kyrie is. He dominates the ball. And that the fit was difficult for everybody involved. And Kyrie, I didn't like the optics of Kyrie in this final game at all. You know, he came out of the game with 8 minutes left. It just, 6-for-21 from the floor. The shooting percentages were abysmal. Give the Bucks credit. They had something to do with it. They threw bodies at him. They blitzed him. But I just, wow. People in Boston, they want this dude out now. And I think they should be careful what they wish for. He was a minus 25 in that game, by the way. Mm. But I think people should be careful what they wish for. I understand the challenges that Kyrie had, the up and downs, the passive aggressive, so similar to his one-time nemesis and now apparently his muse, LeBron. And all of that is, you could be frustrated with all of that. He is a seminal talent. I know he didn't exhibit it in this series, but be careful about telling this dude to not have the door hit you on the way out. He's so incredibly talented. He's one of the few players in the league who can create his own shot in the final seconds of a close game. I understand it did not happen in this series. I'm very clear on that. But the idea that everybody wants this guy to give this guy the bum's rush is astounding to me, still, in spite of everything that's happened.
I was going to say, he wore on him all season long, though. This isn't like
he
it's
did.
A reaction to a bad playoff series. This is a
Agreed.
Reaction to a guy who, you know, announced before the season that he was going to re-sign, made a freaking commercial about being a Celtics legend, and then basically said, I don't know what I was thinking about. And the whole season long was kind of about an alienation of the Celtics by Kyrie and of their fan base, you know, and the kind of passive-aggressive
all
free agency. So it's hard to blame Celtics fans. It's one of those things where usually when you yell, don't let the door hit you on the way, you know, or the good Lord split you, that sort of thing, the door's already open, and you're just saying it. You know, it's like when you call a guy sassy after a fight. You're saying it because the stuff's it's already done. It's already over with. That exact thing.
And
go
everybody
on.
Everybody asks me every single day, what's he going to do? And the answer is the same every time. I don't know, because I truly believe he doesn't know. Because
okay,
I think
but
his only answer changes from day to day. I really believe that. I do.
Do you think returning to Boston is throw me a percentage. Is it better than his field goal percentage in that series? I don't think it is.
I don't. You know, I think today the answer would, and I'm not kidding. I'm not trying to be cheeky. I think the answer today could be different than 4 days from now. And I think what the Celtics will do, because they, you know, despite the sentiment of the fan base at the moment, the Celtics and the media's sentiment at the moment, the Celtics are going to try to retain him. And what they're going to do is say, listen, the team you will come back to will look nothing like the team you were in this year. Because if Kyrie comes back, they go all in on Anthony Davis, and some of the pieces that were here this year will be gone. And the team
Here's
will
the problem,
different.
Jackie. I agree with that. Here's the problem. The timelines don't match up. Because
no, it's
possible.
Problem.
Yeah, it's possible that the Pelicans will trade Anthony Davis before the draft, which would not line up.
Very possible.
And, you know, Kyrie's, let's just refer to Kyrie's comment on the topic. Ask me July 1st. Well.
Right.
Well, frankly, I'm not sure. Yeah.
Well, but here's my thought on that, Brian. So what is it today? May 10th? Are we May 10th? What are we today? We're somewhere in May. I don't know. I've lost track of the days. All of us have. We're in different cities. We don't know where we're going or where we're coming. But it's early May, mid-May. And so that deadline, June, there is a long time for Kyrie Irving to do a lot of reflection, to talk with his family, to talk to Jeff Wexler, to talk with Durant and all his friends and whatever he wants to do. So I don't think it's unreasonable for the Celtics to say to Kyrie, we understand you have until July 1st, but if you are going to leave here, please give us the courtesy of letting us know that before the draft. And I don't think that's an unreasonable request. And I do think Kyrie thinks enough of the franchise to give them that. So I do think that this will come to a head. This is my guess, only a guess, because we don't know. But I think that they'll have a better sense before the draft. Because your point is correct, Brian. The timeline is very different. And then the next question becomes, will David Griffin even want to trade? Look, we know he doesn't even want to trade Anthony Davis. Can he convince him to stay there? I don't believe that. But Griff's a very personable, persuasive guy. We have been told, I think, through channels, most of us have heard this same scuttlebutt, that, you know, Gail Benson has basically told him, to the Lakers over my dead body. So what are his other choices?
Let's wait and see what happens if the Lakers win the lottery next week. On that,
right.
I mean,
my
position on that whole thing is, I think there's two things that I can say with reasonable comfort in talking to the other parties here. One is that Anthony Davis has not changed his position on New Orleans. Two, David Griffin and the Pelicans franchise would like to be able to offer Anthony Davis the $230 million extension formally and have him formally turn that down. They want to cross every T and dot every I. They want to know that, you know, I think the last thing that they want is for there to be stories in October where Anthony Davis says, well, they never even offered me the contract. Because one of the things that happened with the Spurs and Kawhi, now Kawhi had soured and there was a whole thing, whatever happened there. The Spurs didn't exactly run out and hand him the super max offer. They, before they traded him, they did hand it to him, but it was too late. And so I think that the Pelicans want to go through that process. They want to know that they exhausted all matters. And number three, and I think this is important, no matter how the Pelicans feel about the Lakers, the reason that they can take the position that they don't want to do business with them is that the Lakers don't have anything that they want.
Exactly.
So two things would have to happen. One, there would have to be a change in circumstance, which would be the lottery potentially bringing a pick in that could change what their package that they have to offer. Two, and I've suggested this since February, and I don't think the Lakers aren't a functioning operation right now. But if they were a functioning operation, if you don't have the pieces that a team wants to make a trade, you say, what pieces do you want? And I will go out and try to get them. That's what a functioning front office would do. So
good luck.
While the door is closed, I wouldn't say the door is deadbolted there, but the door is closed. And by the way, Jackie, I'm 100% agreeing with you about the Lakers. As time passes here, I would have said that this was impossible for many months, but as time passes here and as, you know, the possibility exists that Jason Kidd could be hired as the Lakers coach, I think the possibility of Kyrie and LeBron reuniting is, you know, that door, which was deadbolted, has now been undeadbolted and is now cracked open.
Yeah, definitely. No question.
And it might even be opening more, by the day. And I say that not because I just think it's on Kyrie's radar. It's on Kyrie's board. He has had discussions with people about playing for the Lakers. But as you said, it's very difficult to
rehab. I asked him point blank this very question. I think I told you this. I think I shared this with you. We were doing a story that will maybe even on the NBA happiness story. I forget. I don't know. And I said, you know what everybody's saying, Kyrie? They're saying now you're going to go back to LeBron. And he looked at me and he laughed. I said, is that a yes or a no? And he laughed again, and he put his arm around me, and he left. So determine what you may. That was three or four weeks ago. So everything's in play. Look, everything is in play with him right now because he's, I mean, I've been around him long enough to know that he is, I'll tell you a little story, and I'm going to usurp a story that I'm writing about, a story about pressure that will come out during the NBA finals at some point, and it talks a little bit. I'm going to give you a little preview. One, I talked to Kyrie for this story. Of course, he hit one of the greatest shots ever. And I asked each player that it's going to be in this story, and that includes Jordan and Curry and Durant and some others, you know, what's the biggest shot you ever hit? What's the biggest shot you ever missed? Okay, because I think you learn so much more from the misses than you do from the makes. That's true, I think. But one of the things Kyrie said to me was he did not give me an example of a miss, okay? But what he did tell me, and you'll remember this, Brian, was after a game in which he did not perform and the team did not perform the way he wanted, it was fan appreciation night. Do you remember this?
Yes.
And he did not come out after the game.
Yes, they give away their jersey and their shoes.
Right.
That's right.
And he did not come out after the game. And he has deep regrets about that, Brian. And he articulates this in the story. So.
It was before LeBron, just as the scene said, it was before LeBron came back.
Right.
He was pretty much the only thing the franchise had going.
Right.
You know, he was.
And he had a bad game. Someone pickpocketed him, I think, maybe, or there was an embarrassing play during the game. I don't have it right in front of me.
That I don't remember.
But he talked to me afterwards and said, I regret not going back out there. I did the wrong thing. I should have gone back out there. And the reason I'm sharing this story with you, when I really shouldn't because it hasn't been published yet, is that there is the part of Kyrie that I've gotten to know and gotten to see that I don't know that everybody does is there is regret. There is a person who's introspective enough that when time passes and he looks back on mistakes that he's made, he has the capacity and the willingness to say, I wish I could have done that differently. And I do think that's important as we go forward here.
That's what.
Not that
that's
I'm this, like, psychiatrist strength thing.
First off, I can't wait for the story because... I can't wait for the story because just the way you told that there was lovely. And by the way, we mentioned earlier this week about Chris Herring's story on Joel Embiid's repeated falling down. That story is now up if you want to go listen or read it.
God bless Chris Herring. Chased him for weeks trying to ask him that question, but unfortunately Joel was hurt. God bless Chris. He's a real
good reporter.
Yeah,
he told a little bit about that. Yeah. The first thing you said when you said that this was Kyrie's regret, I said, that's Kyrie's regret?
Yeah, there's introspection there. That's all I'm saying. We put these guys under a microscope and we scrutinize them in the moment. And then, you know, a lot of them are defiant. Like, I go back to LeBron even after the decision, which I can't believe we're still talking about all these years later. It took him a while, but even he, after a while, after time had passed, admitted, I handled that wrong. I wish I could do it differently. And the guys that never do that are the ones you should really worry about. That's all I'm saying.
That's fair. All right. Well, we are at the buzzer here of the second round of the playoffs, indeed, and also for Mother's Day. And you are in deep trouble if you have not gotten this done. Now, 1-800-Flowers can bail you out, and not only can they bail you out, but they can bail you out and make it look like you weren't in deep trouble and forgot until the last minute. So to get that done, what do? We go to 1-800-Flowers.com because they've got amazing offers on beautiful Mother's Day bouquets and arrangements for as little as $29.99, which is ridiculous. They've got an amazing selection of sweets, treats, in addition to the flowers. She'll never know how good of a deal you score at the last minute. And you can get this deal, like I mentioned, that $29.99 deal today, but you basically got to do it right now. And you can lock in this offer. To get it done, you've got to go to 1-800-Flowers.com, click the icon, and put in code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Order today, save at 1-800-Flowers.com, code HOOP. Again, beautiful and vibrant Mother's Day bouquet starting at just $29.99 with code HOOP. Because we talked about the Lakers here, I just want to talk about their coaching situation real quick. I know that there's been a lot said and written about it. Let me just say that... an error here in somebody who knows Ty Lue, knows how he feels. There was a pretty big error here made by the Lakers in that they saw him as just LeBron's coach. And that was reflective. That was reflective in maybe the way they went about the process. It was reflective in their contract offer. And again, it wasn't so much the dollars. but it was the fact that he only offered him a 3-year contract. And again, it wasn't so much that it wasn't the term, it was that we only see you as the guy who can coach LeBron. And Ty Lue is a very proud man who, one of the things that really irritates him is that he hasn't gotten the proper credit for what he did with that team. And that, you know, one of the things that, you know, if you want to make Ty Lue, who's very mild mannered, if you want to make him upset, you can imply that he somehow, you know, was not doing masterful execution or somehow rode the coattails of some talented players to a championship. He, you know, really, irritates him, as it would any coach who's won a title, to think that, he was just along for the ride. And as somebody who was there every day, I can tell you that was a very difficult situation to manage. And I think you saw how fast it fell apart. So you have to be impressed with how it was kept together. So the McMahon, they made two mistakes. They, you know, they saw him as just LeBron's coach and offered him a contract that implied that, which was an insult to him as a professional. And in some ways as a man, you know, more than just a coach. And secondly, they seemed to take the position that Ty had no leverage because he had no other offers. And this is something that I just can't see from Rob Pelinka, who negotiated contracts for decades. Mm-hmm. Ty Lue is owed $10.5 million over the next 2 years by the Cleveland Cavaliers. He does not need another offer. His leverage is the contract that he has.
And they had no leverage. Like, their other choice had taken another job. And honestly, why is Rob Pelinka's job safe? Like, what has he done as a general manager to justify not being, you know, them not hiring somebody either to work above him or to replace him? They have botched every single thing you can botch over the last year since they were gifted LeBron. They botched the building of the roster around him. You know, the handling of the trade deadline, the hiring of a coach. Like, what has gone right since LeBron has signed there?
Good question.
Not much.
I have a question for you, Brian, because this is the part I can't understand. They clearly have a fascination with Jason Kidd, yet they are so reluctant to name him their head coach. And now they're telling Frank Vogel, who was, I guess, going to be a you know, someone they were looking at as an assistant coach, that they're going to interview him and say, okay, we want you to be the head coach, but we want you to take Jason Kidd as the assistant. So if you love Jason Kidd so much, what is stopping you from naming him your head coach? What's the holdup there?
This is what I said when it came to Ty Lue. If they liked him so much, how come they didn't hire him 3 weeks ago?
Right. So it's just weird. Yeah. Like, is Jason Kidd's background and his domestic abuse background, which people forget, I never forget, and, you know, and again, people deserve a second chance, and he's gone on with his life and all that. But, you know, is that something that gives Jeannie Buss, who's a great voice for women and empowerment and all that, is that what's giving her pause? I don't know. I'm just conjecturing here. I have no knowledge.
Maybe that's, you know, even if that's the case, it's okay to hire him as your coach, but not, it's okay to hire him as an assistant, but not your coach.
Well, very good point. So I'm just trying to understand what, because it seems to me there's this fascination with Jason Kidd, and there has been for some time. There were reports about them reaching out to Jason Kidd during the season. So what's holding you back if in fact that's the case, and why, what is it about him, to your point, You don't want him as your head coach, but you're perfectly fine with him as an assistant coach? What do I make of this? I don't know the answer.
Well, I mean, I don't want to pull the curtain back too much, but I have spent considerable time talking to Jason Kidd about the Lakers job.
And so you got to share something then.
I can't say that I know exactly what he said to them in his interview, but I have a general idea of what his vision for the team was. And I think one of the things that Jason really believed in was developing their young players. He, you know, again, at least in, you know, I don't want to violate too much of a confidence here, but, you know, when we spoke about it, I really do think he was a big believer in Lonzo Ball. He thinks Lonzo Ball can be can really be a good player, and that he wants to help develop him. And I would have assumed, I don't know how Rob Pelinka's thinking, I would have assumed that would have been music to Rob Pelinka's ears, because Pelinka was one of the guys who drafted Lonzo Ball, drafted him ahead of Jason Tatum, drafted him ahead of De'Aaron Fox. And the other thing I think is very important, and look, I've been through some wars with Frank Vogel. I covered very closely some Pacers teams that he coached and long playoff runs, and I've been there at some of his greatest successes. I've been there at some of his worst defeats. I have immense respect for Frank Vogel as a coach. He did one of the greatest interim coaching jobs. I guess it doesn't top Ty Lue because he won the title. He wasn't really the interim, but he came as the interim coach, and I remember talking to him the week he took over for Jim O'Brien, and I've rarely seen an interim coach under those circumstances apply such tremendous change to his team, and really kept his job, I think, for 6 years after that. So this is a preamble to me to say that I have immense respect for Frank Vogel as a coach. That said, I don't think he commands LeBron's respect when he walks in the room. And I think it's very difficult to be LeBron's coach. Earning LeBron's respect is possible, but very challenging. I don't think Frank Vogel would be in that position. Jason Kidd, despite the fact that Frank Vogel has been a much more successful head coach than Jason Kidd would have that. And I think that's a factor in this decision.
Okay.
I also was under the hope, Jackie, that they could maybe rekindle things with Ty Lue, but after investigating that a little bit, I would say that that is DOA.
And good for Ty Lue for standing up for himself. So here's my next question. Jason Kidd as such an attractive head coaching candidate. Does everybody remember that he was the coach of the Milwaukee Bucks and didn't get anywhere near what he needed to get out of that team? And I'm blanking here, Joe Prunty, right? Joe Pert.
Yeah.
Help me out. Why am I blocking?
Joe Prunty, yep.
Joe Prunty, yeah. As the interim during the postseason. But, you know, you look at what Bud has done with that team, and is that it's a wonderful bed of roses for Budenholzer, but isn't it a little bit of an indictment of what Jason Kidd couldn't do?
Well, did you see the player development by Jason Kidd that's paying off for the Bucks now would be the spin. It's
that's
a spin.
Right, man. Stop.
Because, there's
Stop
no question that some basketball, some strategic X and O's type of things have certainly benefited the Bucks.
I mean, if you're a Laker fan right now, you're looking like Frank Vogel, Lionel Hollins. I have great respect for Lionel Hollins and Frank Vogel, but Lionel hasn't coached since when? I mean,
It's been 3 or 4 years.
God, he was like six Memphis coaches ago.
This is just blowing me away. This is blowing.
Well, the
me
thing
away.
About
this
is like at the end of the day, the Lakers have not been able to get their top two candidates, and to me, and as I've said this before, I don't care if they bring back the ghost of John Wooden to coach the team, the ghost of Red Auerbach to coach the team. The roster is what needs the fixing. And if they can't execute the coaching hire, how are they going to execute the roster fix? And this is the grander thing. I just, we haven't even talked about, I don't know, you know, I've read and heard all this stuff about, what's happening with Kurt Rambis. All I would just say is this. And by the way, Kurt Rambis and I work together at ESPN. I have nothing bad to say about Kurt Rambis. I just will say that I judge an organization as a whole, and I've watched them botch things over and over. I watched them land LeBron on July 1st and then make about 15 consecutive terrible roster decisions. I watched Magic walk away. I watched them botch the coaching situation. And
Davis disaster.
Okay, but how is that Kurt Rambis' fault for crying out loud? That's the most
agree.
I think the
Rambis thing is more the concept that Jeannie is going back to, again, to people that her father trusted and were close with.
Lakers to break patterns, not to continue them, is the point.
Well, especially when the patterns are been failing. Yes.
Yes.
We have got game sevens coming up. We have got conference finals coming up. We have got summer concert season coming up. That means that you are going to need someplace to get hooked up for tickets, especially, in these playoffs where at the last minute, you don't necessarily know whether your team is going to advance. They advance all of a sudden and are in an elimination game. You want to be there to see it. How do you get in to see it? Do you know one of the players? You do not, but you do know Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is an online ticketing marketplace dedicated to providing fans of live entertainment with experiences that last a lifetime. Our listeners can watch their favorite teams and artists play in person the way it was meant to be seen. And obviously, Vivid Seats can help you get tickets to any of these events. Also, the theater. Don't forget the theater. They can help you with that as well. Although, come on, we're talking about basketball here. They offer great prices and generally, and this is important, is an easy purchasing experience. So look, you can get a deal with Vivid Seats with the podcast code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. Can get 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. And by the way, all Vivid Seats orders are confirmed and backed with 100% guarantee. So you go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. And again, if you're a first-time customer, put in the promo code HOOPS, H-O-O-P-S, and receive 10% off your first order. All right, well, let's bring it to the teams that are still playing. Boy, Boston and Los Angeles are going to have two fascinating summers. But let's bring it forward to the teams that are still playing. We thought we would get a good second round, and we really are. Durant is going to miss the next two games. McMahon, I don't know. Maybe I was warped, but one of the things I was really surprised about the other night in Golden State was the euphoria surrounding the Warriors after that game. They were so excited and so happy. Yes, yeah, Steve, and I didn't know if Steve like came into the room, with the intention of like really firing his team up because he knew what was ahead of them. I mean, maybe there was some strategery going on, but
strategery.
I thought that this was a really dangerous set. The first thing that blew me away is that there were people walking around that arena that thought Kevin Durant was going to be back soon. The second thing that
soon as the next round.
Well, if there is a next round. And the second thing was that they were so euphoric about that victory, and I get it, but I was like, boy, the Warriors are in real, real, real trouble here. And I you know, maybe it's a credit to them that they don't seem worried, but boy, I think they should be.
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously Kevin Durant was arguably the best player in the playoffs. Steve Kerr calls him the best player in the playoffs, and, you know, we can go back and forth on Giannis, Kawhi, whatever. He's been unbelievable. He's been by far their best player. But why wouldn't the Warriors think they can win without him? I mean, their record with when Steph plays and KD sits, their record is really, really good. And that includes a road win
but you
in
know
Houston
what?
This season.
I know.
And it includes a road win in Houston last season.
I don't care about any of that. That team, those teams were deeper and playing better. And stuff. I don't think that matters. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm wrong.
But Matt,
close game. KD goes out. Steph has his best stretch of this playoff series. I mean, there's a lot of confidence in. Okay, we still got Steph, still got Klay, still got Draymond, still got Andre, and then you know patchwork the rest of it together.
Right. And the thing is, I think what you're missing, Brian, is their euphoria after this game was because they knew exactly everything you're saying. They knew they shouldn't have won this game. I mean, Klay almost threw the ball away, right, at the very, very end there. Mm-hmm. And then they get in and they finish. So if you're – I mean, just think about it. Your best guy goes down. At that point, they think he's torn his Achilles. And what Steve Kerr is saying, he's looking at it from purely this standpoint. Okay, our best guy went down. We still pulled out this game. We had no business pulling out this game, but we did. And that's why we're the champions. And, man, this is a game that I would have understood completely if we had lost. I think it's as simple as that. That was a visceral reaction to a really incredible finish that had some flukes, some luck. We'll call it whatever you want. Now, going forward, that's all different. That was just simply the emotional reaction to that game at hand. That's what you saw.
Steph said something that my eyebrows exploded upwards when he said it. And again, maybe it's just because I'm a little bit of an outsider on the Warriors beat. And I didn't think anybody, I certainly put it in my story, but I really didn't see it around that much. He was talking about when, after the Kevin had limped off and they kind of had a huddle there. And Steph said we looked around and smiled at each other.
But that to me, I interpret that as, hey, you don't think we know what adversity is? Watch us.
Okay, that's fine.
But that's positive self-talk from all these elite athletes. That's what they believe in. I'm like totally good at that.
Well, I think, you know, I think that the Rockets
going to get a lot more shots. No, I'm just kidding.
I thought that the Rockets missed depth now.
You know, don't you worry about their depth now.
I got a five alarm fire on the Warriors right now. I think the Warriors are in deep, deep blank. And I'm not picking up that vibe. And maybe that's because they're champions, and maybe they'll come out tonight and Steph will drop the hammer and score 47 and they'll move on. But
are we near prediction territory from you, Wendy?
No, I'm not predicting. I'm just telling you what I see. And I think the Rockets should have been disgusted with themselves, and they were. Because they missed a gigantic, they should be trying to close out tonight. And, you know, by the way, Jackie, this is a very strange moment that I'm going to let McMahon describe. Yes. It's very unusual to me. I mean, it's totally fine, but it just feels unusual. You know, Doc Rivers is all around because his son's there.
Well, of course.
And,
but why is
you know,
that
Doc
weird?
Was just coaching. It's not, it's just unusual.
Oh, it is unusual, and, but that's been their whole life story. Their whole life story is so bizarre.
Well, just wait till this little moment.
Okay.
But your Doc was just coaching in this building against the Warriors a week ago. You know, it's just
right. Yeah.
So, after the game, everybody was dancing with the Warriors and thinking this was the greatest win in Warriors history. I wanted to go to the Rockets locker room because I felt like that's where the story was. And so I was standing with McMahon. There was like eight of us standing outside the locker room. There were 700 people in the Warriors locker room. McMahon, you want to describe the scene outside the locker room right after the game?
So as part of Chris Paul's routine, he goes through a post-game workout. You know, I don't know what all the science is behind it, but he goes through a post-game workout, and usually in road arenas, he has to do it outside the locker room. So, you know, there's that big area outside the Warriors locker room, and CP3's
the area made famous by Dirk throwing the trash can into the wall. That area right there.
Yeah, yes. over on the other side though.
Same spot though.
About 45 feet from Dirk's heave, I would say.
Same spot. Though.
Anyways,
duly noted.
And so he's going through his workout, and Doc just comes up and starts chatting with him. And it was interesting because obviously that relationship had been strained, to say the least. And Jackie, you know that as well as anybody.
I was surprised.
Yes,
I was surprised.
Matters with both of them soon after CP3's departure, and it was just like and I wasn't close enough to eavesdrop, and if
that's
I had been,
true.
I wouldn't but obviously wouldn't well.
I'm that not, now I mean, that's it, true. It, that, it was, the second part
I,
is
I'll
true.
Just describe it. I'll just describe it as a friendly, basketball discussion between.
They were
the
talking
two.
About the game. They were talking about
talking,
the game.
Just kind of, and it struck me as weird.
Now, see, this is the brilliance of Doc, and I've seen Doc do this before. So, by the time Doc left Boston, Rondo was still there. They were strained. And it just wasn't as publicized. I mean, they were driving each other crazy. And, you know, Doc was like, this kid is such a know-it-all. He can't, you know, he thinks he knows everything. He can't learn. And Rondo's like, I'm so tired of this guy being on my, you know, on my back all the time. So those two, by the end, it was drained. Now, let me tell you, now they're awesome. They're on a group text together with KG and Paul Pierce and Big Baby and Perk. This is the brilliance of Doc. Doc has always been a player's coach, always will be. So Doc had the feelings he had about Chris Paul. He's done very well without Chris Paul. Chris Paul has done very well without him. This is exactly Doc's MO. Why not start to bury the hatchet a little bit? Not because it's ever going to benefit him. You know, they're never going to be together again. He's never going to play for him again. It's just the way Doc views this league and personalities and relationships. They're important to him, and it's why he was always able to build the trust of the players in his locker room. So this doesn't surprise me at all, quite frankly.
Well, I mean, if you did the Rockets a favor, maybe sprinkled a little, fountain of youth dust on CP3, because let me tell you something. CP3 being 34 years old and looking every bit of it is a big part of the Rockets' problem here.
I know.
And
sure
a big reason that I'm not necessarily confident they can close it out or they come back.
He just couldn't close it get out. To his.
Just dude, couldn't he. Get, I looked
he
it up.
Can't get his. He can't get a shot.
Turnovers, Tim, and the turnovers, well,
and,
Tim. It just
and I think those two things are related
indecision.
Because he.
Right.
Yeah, because he's indecision. Not confident. I don't think he can't get to his spots. So it's when you're getting where you want to go, and you're comfortable, I think it's a lot easier to be decisive. When you're like, geez, that move's not getting me any space anymore, and he looks uncomfortable. And so it's not, and it's not, you know, you look at just the box score numbers, obviously those are down. I went back and I looked at the isolation numbers. Last year, Chris Paul was probably the second best ISO player in the league behind only James Harden. And he was even better in the playoffs. He averaged 1.17 point per ISO possession during the playoffs, which is off the charts elite.
Yeah, that's a great
He's
stat.
Been very average this year. Subpar even. 0.77. It's gone from a Chris Paul ISO is a great play and one that the Rockets hunt to a Chris Paul ISO is really inefficient and a bad bailout option. And that's a problem. Because this Rockets offense has been, and give them credit, other than the fourth quarter the other night, which is funny because Harden took this back seat, the Rockets scoring wasn't their problem. They couldn't stop the Warriors. Other than that, they've defended really, really well in this series. They've just been a mediocre offensive team despite the fact that they are healthy.
Well, they only gave up 47 points in the second half. Had they not gotten down by 20, they win that game easily. I mean, and it wasn't like the Rockets were not scoring at all. And I know that their possession by, you know, each possession is its own story. That said,
it was
if
strange.
I'm James Harden, if I'm James Harden, I'm not losing a game like that where I take 16 shots. And
you take one shot in the last 7 minutes, and that's with 18 seconds left.
I know. I mean, if you look at games 3 and 4, which were when Harden was really, you know, near his best, he still hasn't had a transcendent game, which I think is called for tonight. I think he had 29 shots in one and 32 in the other. He had 16 or 17 shots in game 5. It's such a vital game. This is the Rockets' moment. Chris Paul is expiring. We're not sure how they're going to improve this team. Daryl Morey's bag of tricks is getting limited. This is their moment. This is their chance. If they get through this series, they are going to face a team that's sort of out of its depth in the next round, no matter who it is.
Well, exhausted. They're going to be exhausted, either one of those teams. They're playing every other day, the Blazers.
Well, so are the Rockets.
Well, they get an extra day.
Yeah, but they've had the extra day in there. Trust me, that was duly noted by both Portland and Denver that this series got the extra day when those guys have been hammering back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Duly noted by them, let me tell you.
So, the other thing is if the Rockets win this series, they're going to have to go on the road.
And I think the part about Durant that people might be missing is obviously the offense, that's obvious. But defensively, even though he's not guarding Harden one-on-one, but he has been a huge part of Golden State's defensive philosophy and strategy in this series. Mm-hmm. And at one point or another has taken care of Harden, Eric Gordon, all these guys that have been big scorers for Houston in this postseason. And so when I look at where they miss him, first of all, depth, because they've already got issues with depth. Now they're down one more guy. And some of their bench players, as we've noted before, are guys that can't play extensive minutes. We know that. We've got all the data to prove it. But I worry more about them on the defensive end almost than I do on the offensive end, because I just think more shots for Clay and Steph, it's going to generate stuff. Draymond Green will take more shots. I think the offense is, I don't worry about that as much as the defense, and that's something I'd be concerned about if I'm Steve Kerr.
I think that's a great point, and I also think that KD being out makes it really tough to play Draymond at center. One, just because, like, you know, their better bench players are big men. Two, obviously a big part, to your point, of their success defensively is the fact that they've got a 7 foot, guy who's, able to, not necessarily serve as a traditional rim protector, but guard on the wing, be a help defender, can protect the rim in help situations. And Draymond playing center has been a huge problem for Clint Capella. I wonder if this now makes Capella gets Capella back into being a weapon for the Rockets, whereas, even in some numbers where he's gotten some rebounds and whatnot, he's been a liability throughout this series just because he's been getting played off the floor.
Well, one thing, you know, so either Livingston or Looney were in there a lot, and Draymond can't shoot from the perimeter, and Iguodala is, he runs hot and cold, but is shaky at best. I don't think that the Rockets were ready for a game plan where they just had Stephen Curry to worry about. There's a lot of you know, like we've never seen the Warriors this closed down, shooting wise. So like to me, the game plan tonight is, you're bringing the traps. You're bringing the traps to Curry. You're bringing, potentially if Clay gets hot, you're bringing the traps to there, and you will leave the guys open on the backside and, and force them to do it. And so to me, that was one of the things that I thought that they didn't do enough was aggressively go after Curry. Don't let him, you know, operate that way. And I kind of understand it, and that they probably weren't ready, and it was sort of a, you know, a battlefield, situation. It was, you know, there was 2 minutes left to go in the third quarter when Durant goes down. You know, it's hard to make a strategy change like that, but now that they have an opportunity to plan and plot and go over it, I think they absolutely need to bring that in their arsenal, because it was like one of those things where it's like, wait a minute, the Warriors, believe it or not, don't have enough floor spacing right now, especially because, you know, Looney is playing so well and they've got so few options. They have to play him. And so not only do you have potentially Capella stuff, this is it. I mean, I could go on and on and on because I want to get to the other series, but this is the Rockets moment, McMahon. You've been with this team for the last couple of years. The table may never be better than this.
Yeah, and look, you know, obviously last year it's 3-2 and da-da-da, but Chris Paul is the one who limped out of the arena. You know, now the series has flipped the other way, but, I mean, the Rockets have caught a break, and so we'll see what they can do with it.
If there's a team that will be mentally tough enough to go into Oracle in a game 7 and win, it's this team. This is a team that's done it. They've beaten that team over and over in that building. They've got 10, I think I saw the other night, they've got 10 wins against the Warriors the last 2 years or whatever it is, last 2+ seasons. They can do it.
Brian, I just want to be clear. You're saying that today, if we're resetting the series, knowing that KD's not going to play again, that Houston is the favorite. That's what you're saying.
You're trying to get me into some sort of prediction. I'm telling you that if Houston doesn't win these next two, first off, Houston should be up 3-2. And the fact that they're not up 3-2 is a borderline travesty. They don't win these next two games.
Why are you taking their side on the refs?
Of their own making, Brian.
No, that's fair, but I'm just.
No, they've got two great excuses for losing game one. The refs and the runs. Yeah, Austin Rivers.
That's fine. That's a good
guys,
line.
That's all fine and good. The score in games is what the score in games is. Stop it. If they want to win the series, win the next two games and then we'll talk about it. And another shenanigans thing. You talk about their mental tenacity in a game 7, okay? Show me James Harden doing it, because I haven't seen it. I'm sorry, I haven't.
Ooh, really that's tight, fair. Hey. MVP, best player in the world. That's what you tell him he is. It's time. I hear you. It's time. It's time. He's got a great chance.
Austin Rivers. I did just want to get this. Austin Rivers explaining his stomach issues the day after game one. Nobody was laughing in the moment because we're all trying to be respectful, but I think taken in the rear view, it was quite a moment.
In the rear view, huh?
You know, when you hear about Dollar Shave Club, you think about shaving needs. You think about their other great bath products, especially their toothpaste, which is really important to have automatically set up to be sent to you at this time of the year for me, because I'm constantly on the road. I never have to worry about it. It just gets sent to my house. And not only is it a great toothpaste, but I don't have to worry about getting it. But they have the product that I think Mr. Rivers may have been able to use, and anybody who's maybe had a, you know, rough meal on the road. That would be Andrew Hahn's favorite Dollar Shave Club product, the One Wipe Charlie, which I think speaks for itself. But overall, Dollar Shave Club has everything you need to get ready, no matter what you're getting ready for. They have you covered head to toe for your hair, your skin, your face. You name it, they have it. As I mentioned, they do have this program where they will automatically keep you stocked up on the products that you use. And they come right to your house. And, like, I'm going back for 24 hours in between playoff series here. They have already sent stuff to my house. I will have it. I will just scoop it up, throw it in the suitcase and go. It's one less thing you have to worry about. And right now they also have a bunch of starter sets you can try for just $5, like their oral care kit. After that, you can get some restock boxes at regular prices and regular size boxes. So I ask you this, what are you waiting for? Get your starter set for just $5 right now at Dollar Shave Club / hoop. That's Dollar Shave Club / hoop, H-O-O-P. Real strong performance. I'm not surprised at all by Philly. That series has been sort of seesaw like this the whole time. Jackie, you know, Embiid, when Embiid is somewhat right, Philly can beat anybody. When Embiid is wrong, they can't beat anybody. I don't know who's going to show up. I don't know who's going to show up Sunday. I don't know which Embiid's going to show up. But to me, almost like if you hand me the Joel Embiid stat sheet and that's all you show me, I'll tell you whether they win that game or not.
Plus 40 in the box. And, you know, we know that the real plus minuses plus are better, 40. But that's still a huge number. It's absolutely case. But I will say this. If you're looking ahead to free agency or what have you, and you say, okay, who am I prioritizing, Tobias Harris or Jimmy Butler? Isn't the answer very, very, very clear? It's Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler's been just awesome. And, you know, Embiid has said it all along that he needs to be our closer because, you know, when it gets tight at the end of games, it's hard for a big man to dominate the game. We know this from historically. And Jimmy Butler has been that guy. He's been the closer. And I just think if I take one thing from this particular series away from the series, it's how impactful Jimmy Butler has been on both ends and how he's made himself somewhat indispensable.
Indispensable enough to give him a 5-year contract because that's what he's going to be looking
for
to stay in.
Yes, place. I believe so. I believe so. I do.
That's a tough one.
It is a tough one, but if you want to go forward, I think he's proven, and you know, all the questions that Embiid had when he first arrived, those are all gone. He's been a model teammate. So I think I think he's made a great case for himself.
Yeah, well,
I'm not his agent, but perhaps I play one on a podcast at times.
Well, look, in all honesty, this is a pretty simple negotiation, I think. I think you're asking for the fifth year if you want to stay in Philly. I think maybe there's some negotiation about the guarantee level of that fifth year.
Right.
But
okay,
to me,
fair enough.
If you're playing hardball, which Bernie Lee is his agent, and I expect him to play hardball, I would think that the fifth year has got to be there. So to me, as important as Embiid is to Philly, they've absolutely got to get a good Kyle Lowry game on Sunday. Lowry doesn't have to score a lot of points, but the way Lowry plays so often determines. And then I'll also say they got to get a good Marc Gasol game. Gasol's variance in this series has been huge. There have been some games where he's been great, some games where he hasn't. Leonard has pretty much brought it every game. Siakam, mm-hmm. the last two games, has played pretty well. Gasol and Lowry, the two veterans who they really rely on in this situation, have been up and down. And it's a game 7 on your home court. Those guys got to do it.
Agreed.
And Gasol can't play hesitant. He can't pass up wide open shots. Yeah, if Embiid wants to coast defensively, he has to make him pay up for all those.
He's got to draw him away from the basket, right? You know?
Mm-hmm. And when he gets a good look at a three, let it go.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I do think also that we talked about Harden in a game 7. I feel the same way about Lowry. If he wants to exercise all those demons, DeMar Rosen, they traded him away to exercise his demons. Kyle Lowry is the leftover. He's the guy that lives with the disappointment of the Raptors, and he could shed some of that in a big game 7. And he's a guy that, again, when it's gotten really, really tight, hasn't always performed the way you would want your, you know, all-star, at sometime all-star, I guess we can call him, mm-hmm. point guard. So I think there's a lot riding on him, too. I agree with
and
that.
Ben Simmons, go ahead, McMahon.
No, Ben Simmons, you make your point there. I want to get back to Embiid after you do that.
Ben Simmons had an impactful game last night. He's a guy who's, you know, the narrative is sort of sort of in the gray area right now. He needs to have a forceful performance. I'll never really necessarily judge him on this points that he scores, but sometimes he plays games with force where you feel him out there, and sometimes he does not. He's going to have a forceful game seven.
Yeah, and this thing, the storyline is so set up for Joel Embiid. Not just the game seven stage, but going back to Toronto, where you were sick, you played like crap, you got ripped by, Barkley and those guys for kind of, making sure everybody knew exactly how sick you were and dragging down the energy of your team. And you got mocked by the entire crowd. Drake's up there mocking your little airplane celebration. Joel Embiid, the NBA's ultimate troll, has a chance to pull off a pretty strong, I don't know, it can't be the strongest of the postseason because we'll get into Coney's factor later, but, Dame's little wave was about as good as it gets. But, man, this is, for a guy who gets hyped up by kind of the soap opera and the saga surrounding a season and surrounding the series, this is set up for one hell of a Joel Embiid performance.
That's a good point.
It's his mindset. You've absolutely captured his mindset, Tim. This is exactly the stuff he's lived for. I hope the knee can hold up because I like teams to play at full strength, although, gosh, none of them are. It's incredible how many significant injuries he's had to significant players in this postseason.
I'm going to be honest. I really didn't get to see much of the Blazers-Denver game last night. I was driving. I was driving with one of our producers from The Jump, Michael Bodmer, who's a huge Blazers fan. He was watching the game on his phone and living and dying with every basket. He was reporting to me. I'm not in a position on commenting what's going to happen in that game.
Wendy, believe it or not, Rodney Hood looks like an absolute killer. Killer. Going into free agency, good timing.
No one would ever say that. I mean, we'll talk later this summer about what kind of contract he would get, but this is unbelievable. The guy looked like he was petrified every time he stepped on the court last playoffs.
From Rodney Hood, I think this is further evidence of what a great leader Damian Lillard is. He is a guy who inspires confidence, not takes it away from teammates. And look, Lillard was great last night. McCollum was great last night. And they weren't going to go out on their home floor. That was clear. That was not going to happen.
Agreed. But I will say this. I've been watching, I was at game five in Denver. And these two teams are both exhausted. If you look at the minutes, the postseason minutes, the leaders in postseason minutes, they're everybody from this series. It's had to go that way. Murray played 46 minutes in this game, guys, last night.
Now he's 24. That's interesting.
No problem. Yeah.
Monty Morris is one of the better backup point guards in the league throughout the regular season, but
he struggled in the series.
Yeah, Malone has clearly just said this ain't it for him.
Well, he struggled in the series in particular. Yeah. But like McCollum played 42 minutes. Like these two guys, these two teams. This has been an amazing series. I wish people had paid better attention to it because it's just been incredible, the back and forth. And after game five, Lillard in Denver, he looked to me like a player who was completely exhausted mentally and physically. Mm-hmm. And yet we all know, because of who he is and because of his DNA, that he would have the game he had. This didn't surprise me at all.
And he started slow, and it doesn't matter.
It doesn't faze him. Yeah, no, he's terrific.
The confidence in him, when he knocks down those 30-plus footers at home, it just does a different type of thing to that whole crowd, that whole atmosphere.
Right. You can't say enough about Portland. Go ahead. What do you want to say, Andrew?
He wants to introduce the ape word a little related.
Give out the award.
Jeez. First of all, this is like when they hand out the freaking regular season awards in August or whenever the hell they do it these days. I mean, it's got moss on it, but I'm going to go through it real quick. This is the April. Remember, all the way back to April. So second round doesn't apply. But essentially, this is the first round Cojones Factor Award because I'm not going to lie. When you do it for April, the last couple weeks of the regular season, those get lost in the wash. Fortunately, we do have three very worthy candidates, and I'll go through it quick. Number three,
and I say this sadly, because we won't get to see him play tonight or in a game 7 should it be necessary. Not sure when we'll see him again, or for that matter, what uniform he'll be wearing the next time we see him. That is KD. In 6 April games since he declared, "I'm Kevin Durant, you know who I am." The dude went off for 38-plus points per game. I mean, he slammed the door on Pat Beverly and the Clippers with a half a hundred. I mean, that was pretty impressive KD stuff to close out that series and start out against the Rockets. So, shout out to KD. Now, actually, we got a loser, a first-round loser, not a loser in life. A first-round loser is the runner-up. But, man, Lou Will is always going to get Cajonis Factor.
Lou Will is not a loser in life. That is for damn sure.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Or in basketball, just in the first round. But, man, Lou Will, I mean, this dude had 33-10 when they came back from 113 down at the Oracle. I forgot the what was it, 31? 33-10 in that. Big shot after big shot after big shot. The other time that they beat the Warriors, he goes for 36-11. And like I said, I do, it's kind of a season long, even a career long tip of the cap, because Lou Will really does kind of personify cojones in the NBA definition of the word. So shout out to Lou Will. But the April Cajones Factor Player of the Month, I don't think there's ever been an easier decision. I don't think there's ever been a better walk-off for an NBA playoff series. Dame heard all that talk from Russ, all that yapping in his ear, all watched all the baby rocking, saw freaking Schroeder over there tapping his watch the one time that OKC actually won a game in that series. Invited our boy Chris Haynes over to dinner, said, "Hey, print this after I close them out." Talked all kinds of talk, went off for 50 and hit a 37-footer in Paul George's face, because it was Paul George, Russ didn't want to guard him, in Paul George's face to close out the series, waved bye-bye to Russ, and calmly, coolly walked off into the chaos of a celebration. He opened the series with a logo Lillard shot, closed it with a logo Lillard shot. That was perhaps the most impressive first-round Cajones display that I've ever seen. Congratulations,
beautifully
Damian
said,
Lillard.
Beautifully said. And as we close this podcast, I want to say this. McMahon, we heard nothing from most of the Cajones Factor winner, who was, if he didn't win every month, he was in the top three every month. Did not hear the words James Harden. Now, if James Harden isn't your Cajones, if he's not your Cajones Factor winner, or at least in your consideration, because he's not in your consideration right now, it'll be a real shame. And so tonight, James Harden, let's see some Cajones. Need to see it. Jackie, thank you. Enjoy Game 7 in Denver.
But I got to tell you one thing.
Yes.
We've done a disservice to Jokic and Murray on this podcast, who has been playing some of this phenomenal... Disservice.
It's for April. And look, I get...
I'm not talking cojones. I'm talking podcast as a whole here, Tim.
Oh, podcast as a whole.
That pick and roll...
We've got plenty
that
of...
That pick and roll combo is unbelievable. Unbelievable. In fact, Tracy McGrady in a story that I don't know when it's going to drop. Andrew, when's it dropping? Pick and roll story. Tracy McGrady declares him the best pick
Sunday.
And roll tandem ever. Better than...
Ever.
Malone.
Well, hey,
this is too late in the podcast to bring this up.
Yeah, it was unfair that we
have not discussed Denver and how great these two players have been. That's all.
Well, let me just say that I had an essay that was on Countdown last night on Jokic that was one of my favorite, like an edit essay with highlights and stuff. It's one of my favorite things I've done this whole season. So, I can't show it to you on this podcast, but trust me, my admiration for Jokic is very high, even though we didn't talk about him here.
By the way, Royce Young had a tweet last night. Royce Young, I thought this tweet gave Jokic some love and summed him up perfectly. He said, "Nikola Jokic is somehow both graceful and hilariously clumsy, and it's such a beautiful thing."
Yeah, Royce.
To watch Jokic bring the ball up
lumbering as could be, lumbering, stumbling, spinning, one-legged, and just put it up there with the softest touch, and then you realize he was in control the whole time. He is definitely one of the most unique players in the league, and hey, if they win Game 7, there'll be a pretty big spotlight on him. He'll get plenty of attention when they're playing in the West Finals.
All right. Thank you, McMahon. We'll see you tonight. Thank you, Jackie. Enjoy Game 7 in Denver.
Guys, yeah.
Thank you to Kyrie back in New England. Kyrie in New England.
Kyrie, what are you doing?
Which Kyrie am I talking about?
First off.
Oh, it's our Kyrie. It's our Kyrie. It's our producer, Kyrie.
We love our Kyrie.
And our man,
Andrew Hanamele.
Our man, Andrew Hanamele. Thanks for listening to Hoop Collective. Have a good weekend.
Adios, amigos.